This is Andy Oram from O'Reilly Media, and I'm talking today with Shahid Shah, who is the CEO of Netspective and a blogger at healthitguy.com. So Shahid, I understand you're going to talk at the Open Source Convention coming up in Portland, Oregon in July, going to talk about medical devices that hook up to patients and about how open source software can help these devices talk to electronic records. So tell us a bit about your work.
Sure. Thank you, Andy. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to both you and your listeners. Basically, my discussion is going to start with the introduction to what's called patient-centered research or comparative effectiveness research that, of course, is one of the underpinning requirements for any healthcare outcomes improvements or reductions in healthcare costs. So if you or your listeners have been tracking what's been going on over the last few years with the general healthcare debate, the Obama administration has been pushing healthcare reform in general in various ways, and the Republicans have been promoting their ways in various ways. However, what is common across all these is that in order to get any cost savings whatsoever, we need to know what are the most effective treatments and what are the best outcomes we can get out of those treatments. And in order to do that, one of the ways we figure out whether one treatment is better than the other is we do what is called comparative effectiveness research, or it's now being better known as patient-centered research, and you can find out all about this at the Health and Human Services website at hhs.gov. Now, when you look at patient-centered research or comparative effectiveness research, it is a grand consumer of data. It just needs lots and lots and lots of data for us to be able to know that if I have prescribed a certain medication for a certain type of treatment to a certain kind of patient, and there's another patient who has the same ailment but got different medications, how did those two compare to each other? And in order to do that, we need to know precisely who were the patients, what were their ages, all of the information associated with their ailments and conditions and medications and prescriptions and things like that, lab results, and et cetera. So there are various kinds of data that we track. One is called patient-provided data. That is the kind of like the history and things that the patient provides us. Then there are two kinds of data that that a healthcare professional will provide us. One is structured data, like they might type in and specifically tell us that they prescribed a medication that a particular diagnosis was found out, et cetera. There's another one called unstructured data. That's just, human beings talking about a particular patient and that getting transcribed and put into a medical chart. So you have data from a patient, you have data that that a physician or professional is providing in a structured way, very inputs of data elements. Then there's just things that they talk about, the observations that they've made and they put into our records. And those kind of, all three of those are somewhat electronic today. They are, you'll find some things on paper, some things electronically, and the government is pushing electronic health records in a big way. And so we're going to see those three kinds of data being injected into our health IT ecosystems over time. But there's a big area that's really lacking, and that is taking the potentially gigabytes, if not terabytes, of data being generated by hospitals and medical devices almost every day into these medical charts. So that was a long way of establishing, why do we care about medical devices? Well, because medical devices are some of the best ways known to be able to get error-free, mostly error-free data into our patient charts. And so if we look at the other three kinds of data that we just talked about, either provided by the patient that has a lot of error capability because the patient might not tell us everything, or they may not tell us completely truthfully what we are expecting. Professionals may do hand data entry and may get the data that they've entered incorrect. They may forget to put it in. It may take a delay of coming in. The natural language data is very error prone because there's no way to truly analyze natural language data in any reasonable way. But this fourth type, this type that is coming straight from medical devices, connected to human beings, monitoring human beings, pumping insulin into our bodies, et cetera. These are great ways of getting data into these electronic health record systems in a very fast, because they're very quick, they're reliable because they're going to be generally error-free, and we can trust them. So if we're going to do patient-centered research or this comparative effectiveness research, and we're using data to tell us whether something works or doesn't work, that data has to be believable. That data has to be reliable, error-free, quick to come in. And of the four types of data that I talked about, there's only one of those, and that is the medical device data that has all of those different qualities that I talked about. And that's really what sets up this argument saying that we need to get device data from medical devices. And what is the best way to do that? And so my push it has been for the last several years is to get these devices connected. And I've been working with a number of device companies to help provide some guidance on around architecture, strategy, design, on how to use open source technologies as well as open source standards, of course, to be able to pursue that goal.
So I suppose at this point, if a patient is in the ICU or is there some other device connected up, someone has to take a look at some reading and then say, oh, it's too high, or oh, it's too low, and then manually adjust the treatment.
That is correct. And so what happens oftentimes these days in what are called high acuity settings, the one that have the most involvement between a healthcare professional and a patient, you know, right after a surgery or intensive care units, those environments have a lot of data being generated. Data is being captured in many ways, but it's really not injected as well into the patient charts as it could be. But those areas in the high acuity areas are doing a decent job, if not a great job in certain cases, like an academic medical centers, et cetera. But the vast majority of medical devices that are sitting in hospitals today are sitting either independently, they're just sitting, they don't even know that there's another device nearby. They're disconnected because they might not have wireless connectivity, they can't connect to a network, or even if they can connect to a network, their data might be emitted, but it doesn't have a gateway device or a device that can get it into the patient chart in any reasonable way. So there's a lot of room for improvement here, to say the least. And again, this room for improvement, if we were to focus on it, would yield us an enormous amount of great data, because if you think about, for example, a two-hour operation of some sort, the amount of data generated during that operation about what's going on with the patient in an anesthesia system, or what's going on with the patient amongst all the remote monitoring that's going on, there's a lot of data available that we could use during surgery and say that, you know, if we did our surgery this other way, the data shows that we have better outcomes coming out. Now, that's really hard for human beings to do because there's just too much going on. The physicians and the nurses can't be sitting around writing notes to each other about how the surgery is going. They should be taking care of the patient. But there are systems inside that hospital operating room that could be capturing all this, and it's just not today.
Do you think it could be used for immediate feedback, or are you still just think that we should depend on human beings to make the right choices right on the spot?
No, that's a great question. I think that the general medical device industry would love to get into this area of immediate feedback, but there is one major problem, and that is that there's no solid industry-wide data standards or approaches that allow vendor A to talk to vendor B's device to influence and say, hey, like for example, if you were about to sew up a patient after the surgery has been completed, but the anesthesia system or another monitoring system is telling you, hey, this patient is about to crash, there's really no way for one system to communicate that to the other. So I think everybody really would love to get a lot of informed data out of these devices. But each of the devices today that is in that operating room or in the ICU or throughout any of the places in the hospital is really just alarming independently without being able to alarm and then inform or influence some other devices nearby to go do something about it. So we would love to have it, but I think right now, if we just do enough to be able to inform the humans about what happened afterwards, you know, get that data into a chart, make it analyzable, that will be a good step forward.
It sounds like you're repeating a common cry in the healthcare field, which is for more standards or better standards.
And in other areas, I'm really not one to think. I've been in this industry for about 15 years now, and we really do have a lot of standards available in the healthcare industry, you know, from a coding perspective. perspective in the sense of when I say coding to other developers, we may think about Java or C++ and stuff. Coding in the medical industry means that some action has occurred. For example, you know, you broke your leg. There is a code associated with leg. You know, you have been diagnosed with pneumonia. The code associated with being diagnosed with pneumonia. So there are a lot. There are a lot of standards available, but there is one missing area, and that is this med device area. There are no microformats. There are no formats associated with how streaming data should be set up. So we do need a lot of attention in that particular standards area. But the general cry about standards really is probably more pronounced than it should be. We've had standards for a long time. We just need to use them instead of coming up with new ones.
So how about open source software?
Open source, I think, gives us a tremendous leg up, because if you think about the costs associated with medical devices, much of that cost comes from the fact that this software and hardware in medical devices is FDA regulated. So for example, there's three different classes of FDA regulation, class 1, 2, and 3, 3 being the highest risk, meaning it could accidentally kill you if there were some bugs or other things in the software. Class 1 means that it is a regulated device, but that the risk isn't associated at the same level as a 3, and then of course 2 sits in the middle. Now, because these are regulated systems, the risk analysis and the work associated with these devices has to be recomputed, recalculated every time somebody builds new software. Well, if we look at the open source world, we know that there are software packages like an enterprise message bus such as Mule or Apache. These are used by hundreds of thousands of clients already. They're very good systems. All the bugs are known in most cases, and when they're not known, they're made transparent very quickly. Fixes are done. And when you look at the open source side and say, okay, I'm going to build my medical device on a system that is transparent, cheap, easy to use, easy to integrate, I don't have multiple licensing issues, et cetera, it gets me to my goal that much faster. And if you think about it in a regular business or enterprise environment, you love to save money and time. But imagine now that our med devices and the gateways that are being used there are able to sit on open source software. They're not just saving time and money in the terms of not having to write new code, but they can save time and money by sharing the risk analysis done in safety critical systems. So the risk analysis associated with a medical device in a what's called a safety critical environment, if we got together and 5 companies, 10 companies, just doing exactly what Apache did 15 years ago with a web server, and saying that we have core software, core operating systems, core hardware components that can be reused, then we can do our risk analysis once or twice or 3 times, and not every single time when somebody goes out, and then cut the time it takes to build these devices and get them out.
There's some interesting software projects that are specific to healthcare that are open source and that you're using?
Yes, I would say that so one of the areas that we're within med devices, of course, is on the embedded side. You have some pretty nice operating systems already available, like Linux. For Linux embedded is a good solid start. On the data distribution side, there is a nice standard called DDS, a data distribution service. So those are two core components I think would be great to start with. Then there's another open source protocol along with the open source implementations of XMPP, the messaging protocol that is often used by Jabber and other clients for chat messages. And you think about it and say, well, why do we care about chat messages in medical devices? It needs to tell the surrounding parties, hey, I'm awake, here I am, this is my ID, this is what I do. And it could use protocols like HTTP protocols and web servers like Apache, using protocols like XMPP and DDS to be able to communicate all of that. If you think about the way that medical devices have been done for the last 30, 40 years, we've had them for a long time, they've all been proprietary protocols. So if we could take step one and say, start using Linux, Apache, XMPP, DDS, et cetera, at the protocol level, build in a small web server in each one of our med devices that could communicate back and forth through these multiple protocols, now we'll be able to say that even if we don't have a quote standard with respect to we have the standards to say, yes, each of these devices can at least understand HTTP and HTTPS and those kind of protocols. So when I say standards, we're not talking about we need brand new standards that have never been developed. We just need medical device companies to start using what everyone has been using for the last 15 years or so.
And are they in use on the EHR side?
They yes, absolutely. On the EHR side, there are many of these standards used. So, for example, you have web applications instead of fat client applications these days. You have a major open standard, which is called HL7, that's in use on the EHR side in heavy use. So that's a good place to be. And we can learn a lot on the med devices side from IT side, and especially the electronic health records, but they have a lot of to learn from the medical device side as well, because the electronic health records are not as reliable as some of our medical devices are on the safety critical side. So there's a lot to learn from both sides. But the good news is that because the government has been pushing the electronic health record market, that's going to get accelerated because of that government push. That push is not there just yet on the medical devices side, but we know that cost reductions are going to come from medical device usage.
Now, we've been talking about how you have been in contact with the Food and Drug Administration, and you have been talking about possible changes to regulations. Did you want to mention anything about those?
Yes, I mean, this is an area where just because I'm in the DC area, you know, a lot of the conferences and the events that we go to, we're able to meet up with the people at the FDA or Health and Human Services, HHS, ONC, the Office of the National Coordinator. And I'm actually very pleased to see the speed at which things are moving forward as far as regulations are concerned in general. But one of the areas I'm a little disappointed is that if you think back to the early discussion we had of the four primary ways we get data, this one major way of getting data just isn't it's just not in that same priority ballpark as everything else is. And of course, things take time to do, but that was one of the conversations I was having with some architects at HHS just earlier this week is, you know, with all of the requirements for data that we're talking about, the government has focused so much on data that's hand-entered that they've forgotten that there's a ton of this data available that's easily accessible electronically, could be put into the charts. But of course, we know the electronic health records just aren't ready to take in gigabytes and gigabytes of data per day for each patient that comes from all of these devices. So there's a lot of work to be done. But if we don't start that conversation now, it'll take a decade instead of half a decade to get it done.
And also, you would probably like to have some changes in how insurance companies or the CMS reimburses providers.
Yes, we would love to see a incentive given to providers by both insurance as well as CMS. And CMS, of course, in this case, is the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. So in general, the biggest payer within the United States is Medicare. And if they were to start providing incentives for electronic collection of data at the source, as opposed to saying, just give us the data, whether it's hand-entered or not. If the data were made available electronic from the source, it'll be of higher quality, more reliability, et cetera. And by changing that, it would be very good. The second thing they could do quickly is to start saying that medical device data can be reimbursed. If you collected the device, if you collected the data with the patient sitting at home, it would be equal to the data being collected as if it were done in your office. So it's a little known secret today, but if a doctor or physician does not see the whites of your eyes sitting in front of you, he's not likely to get paid for whatever work he does. So for example, if you had a really nice medical device that manages all kinds of good health data sitting inside a home, that data being pushed over electronically into the physician's office, into your chart, he would not get money for just reviewing that data in the same way that he would get money if you came in and told him about it during a visit. So that's a major problem right now is telehealth, telemedicine, remote medical devices, remote monitoring. These are not reimbursed in the same way. So there's no incentive for physicians to say, okay, instead of making you come to my office three times a month, I can give you this device, which would tell me everything that I need to know in most cases, except for the emergency ones. So yeah, we definitely need those changes.
Now, since we're talking about what the doctors are doing and asking them to adopt these new technologies, these new practices, there's certainly resistance on their side, and we should be fair and acknowledge it's not just being sticks in the mud. They really have some good reasons to worry about risk and change.
Absolutely. And you know, this is one of the things that I often lecture on, is that physicians and healthcare in general are often accused of somehow being anti-technology, which couldn't be further from the truth. Their healthcare is not averse to technology. They're really averse to stupidity, right? I mean, in most cases, when the government asks them to do something or when the patient asks them to do something, we assume that they, you know, that they're healthcare providers and of course, they're just doing this for the general benefit of mankind. Well, of course, that's not true. We know that they're professionals. They need to be compensated and paid in particular ways. And that if we ask them to even ask for one new piece of data, somebody has to enter that. If they see 20 or 30 patients a day, even one new field of data that takes 1 minute to capture is now 30 to 45 minutes extra per day for that one physician, or some he now has to hire somebody to do this. So absolutely, I think that we must understand that these physicians are doing the hard work as it is, which is to take care of the patient. That's their real job. Their job is not to collect data. Their job is not to somehow you know, manage all this data and then do comparative effectiveness research. Their job is to take care of their patients, not the general population of everybody in the United States, but who are their patients. Once we understand that physicians and healthcare providers and professionals in general accept valuable products. If you think about whether it's a computer or a iPhone or smartphones in general, the MRI machine, et cetera, these are all high technology items, and they have been universally accepted by these same professionals who we sometimes claim to be technology averse. They're not technology averse. They're stupidity averse. You make them do something stupid, just like good programmers. We don't like doing dumb stuff. They don't like doing it either. And that's what I often say is when someone is asking a doctor to do something, does it seem reasonable for them to do it for their benefit? If not, then you have to pay them if it's someone else's benefit.
Well, Shahid, you have the advantage of looking at things holistically. I really admire you for doing that. And it seems like each step toward a more efficient future requires money, upgrading the device, upgrading the EHR, taking the time to accept and integrate the data. So it's only when all these things are together and working in a circular fashion that we see the benefits.
Exactly.
That's
and
the hard part.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very difficult if we don't get those incentives aligned properly. The issues that we have in our country with healthcare have more to do with misaligned incentives. We tell people to do, like, for example, physicians are incented to see people because they're not paid in any other way. However, if you could incent them to treat people instead of seeing people, if you could incent them to communicate with people instead of seeing people, then you could change those dynamics around. If you think about the banking industry and the way that consumers like us have adopted the fact that when I go to my bank now, even if the line is empty amongst the tellers and there is a line for the ATM, I still stand in line with the ATM. Why? Why is it? Is it because I'm crazy? No, it's just somehow it's okay for me to say sometimes I'm going to get my job done faster at the ATM than I will in the teller line. But the bank doesn't penalize me if I go to the teller versus the ATM. I make the choice on whatever is most convenient to me. Because of our incentives and the way that we are paid for, the way healthcare is paid for today, we are incenting people to show up into a doctor's office on both sides, because insurance will not cover our work if we do electronic communications, and insurance won't cover the doctor's work if he does it electronically. Yet we know that that's much cheaper, faster, and will give generally better outcomes. In the banking industry, in travel, et cetera, you know, we don't mind not, going to a machine and getting our e-ticket or boarding pass, and we do that manually, even though there could be a human being that could provide that to us. Why? Because of convenience. Now, we make those decisions because nobody pays for our travel tickets, nobody pays for our banking accounts, et cetera, but our incentives get misaligned because someone else pays for these other things, and they get to determine then how things are done. So if we were to do our alignment of these incentives a little bit better, I mean, we don't have to throw all of the stuff that we have out and go completely brand new, but those incentives, and especially around electronics, medical devices, telehealth, allowing people to do things remotely instead of having to come into the office would change.
It seems like this might be a good moment where there is a shift to the thing that you have been working toward for so many years. There's a lot of the quantified self movement. People are buying scales that can upload their weight to the internet. And the FDA did issue a rule recently we talked about in our private conversation about how devices that connect to the medical device don't have to be regulated as stringently as the medical device. So perhaps we actually will have a shift to what you're envisioning.
I think so. And because we're seeing that the telemedicine and this remote device management capability is improving, and again, because like you said, I'll just explain this, what's called the MDDS rule that the FDA put out a few months back, is that now medical devices that just need to connect and export their data, connect just for sending data out, it means, it used to be before about 3 months ago, that even devices that read a medical device's data could become regulated. The lucky news is now that we do not have to worry about that, is that if you're just reading device data and presenting it to a user or whatever your particular functionality is, you're not going to be regulated just because you're reading it. If you change it or if you're going to offer new advice on it, et cetera, that's a little bit different, but just reading it, you won't be. And so rules like the FDA here, there are some forward-thinking and forward-leaning insurance companies. There are forward-thinking companies like Kaiser Permanente, for example, that are leading this way. But until we see a major shift towards telehealth and telemedicine and remote medicine in general being paid for in some reasonable ways, the physicians don't have that incentive. And until the physicians have the incentive, there really is no way of succeeding.
Yes. Well, is there anything else you would like to say before we wrap up the conversation?
Just that I appreciate your time, and hopefully, you know, if you're interested in this subject about healthcare data and how medical devices are a pristine way of getting that, definitely come by OSCON on Thursday and listen to my talk. I'm happy to spend some time with you.
I'll see you there.
Thank you, Andy.
Bye.
Bye.